parts of the outfit for Johnny Depp you found it on flea market. Is there any other like secret locations where you find the inspiration?
For costumes? Well, I find them everywhere. Fabric stores, sometimes I see a piece of fabric that's great and I go, oh, that could be this, and you know, I get ideas from all over the place, basically. So I like the, there's a great flea market in France, in Paris, that I go to in the north of Paris. It's always great for inspiration, for bits and pieces and stuff that's interesting. And all these movies, you know, that this movie's made in London. So London has Portobello Road, which sometimes I don't have a purpose in mind. I just get up really early on Saturday morning and go there when it first opens before it gets crowded and wander around, and you find, like, he has a lot of weird buttons on his costumes and things, and most of those I've sourced there, old hat pins. You know, just weird stuff people have in trays in front of their things, and it's fun to just discover things that way, I think.
Any favorite flea markets in New York?
You know, in New York, I like the, I meditated on going down there this morning, the one, I think, is it 26th Street? The one,
there's one
that's kind of through a garage that you walk through, and I love wandering around there, and then there's the Emporium there that's, that has some great stuff, so I usually visit there. There's a great lingerie place there that's beautiful upstairs. It's quite expensive, but she has great stuff. So I love those ones. There's a few places like wholesale, sort of warehousey things I've gone to in Brooklyn as well that are great, but they're not so accessible to people that are just, you know, flea market shopping.
Got it.
So time is a really distinct costume. What was like your inspiration, your thought process behind that?
Well, it was, I wanted him to be, kind of feel like he was something to do with a clock without literally being a clock. And I also wanted him, I love the sort of graphic aspect of the clock kind of towering over little Alice and stuff. So luckily Sasha's already about 6'3", 6'4", so that helped that I didn't get a short guy for the part. But I put him in really high platform boots for part of it. And then he has those like long, thin legs, so we did like little skinny legs and a poofy pant, and then the big shoulders to get him, you know, wider, sort of like a grandfather clock. And then we came up for an idea to even get him taller with using a really tall hat on him, like the bishop's sort of medieval hat that he has, sort of like a Greek Orthodox, but it comes from way early in time. And in his fitting for that, we had brown paper, and we just kept putting it in different hat shapes and trying them on him and figuring out which one was the best for him and for time, and we came up with that one. And it was sort of maximum height. We had some that were taller, but it was too much. It almost made him look shorter. So that was sort of where we spun out from him. In the movie, you see, like, on his hand, he has a thing that's all these rings and stuff. That was like a piece of metal mesh I found in a flea market, and then I found all these watches with convex lenses on them that stuck out, so they were like cabochon jewels. So we took those and made those into his hand thing to make it like sort of like his sort of element of time, and the rest was kind of all kinds of stuff, his different materials. And we had a long cape on him for a minute, and then, you know, most of the time he wore the short cape because it made him look funnier with his skinny legs.
Movement is such a big part of this film, and you chose to use very different textures in the fabric. Was that something that you just felt it and touched it and knew that this would be a great dynamic on the screen?
Well, I've done a lot of digital films at this point and know kind of what the camera sees. And especially when you go darker than a medium ground, it's really important to have a texture and almost like a surface. It's got a little bit of shine to it and stuff that kicks back some light. Otherwise, what you get is a sort of black shape. You don't really get much depth. So I've learned to paint into costumes and add layers and stuff to them to give it more dimension that way in a lower light situation. So I use that trick a lot on this movie. And I like texture. I think it tricks the camera in a way that's interesting because sometimes you can't even perceive what it is, but it just gives it a feeling that's nice and kind of a little bit more interesting than if you just use the fabric as it comes off the peg.
So my question was going to be, obviously designing for a sequel is a lot different than designing the first time around. So what was your approach when you revisited these characters and kind of built on the way that you had already designed for them?
Well, I felt like it was nice. I felt like I knew them. I knew who they were as people. So I felt like I could have a little more play with them. I had a couple more opportunities because we had the flashback for the girls where they were their teenage kind of selves. And then, each of them had been on a journey. My constant was other than her flashback, was Smirana, the Anne Hathaway character. Her costume sort of remained the same. But Alice, when we left Alice, she was going off to see the world, and she came back as a very rare thing, a sea captain, as a woman. So I had the kind of opportunity to take the beautiful uniforms of the period and make one for her, and then create her Chinese look from her Chinese journey, and then revisit like something that perhaps the Hatter had made for her and her final costume with the balloon pants mm-hmm. and the kind of whimsical blouse made out of strips of fabric. So I kind of took each character and sort of felt like I could go free with them. It was sort of like a new movie totally for me as a designer, but with the people that I knew from before.
Is there one character from the movie that stands out as being the most enjoyable to design?
Well, when you get a movie like this, they're all fun because they're all such
so different,
mm-hmm. things. So it's really, I love Helena's costume and her character, her take on the character is so much fun. And it was great to get to do her armor, which I really love doing with the thorn heart chest piece and the kind of military grade hoop and sort of like a deconstructed sort of military madness thing that the Red Queen would come up with. Mia's clothes were great. I mean, they were like it was like the first one, like getting to do the Chinese take on a costume was a really beautiful journey, and I got to use embroidery and all kinds of techniques that I hadn't used before on the Alice prequel.
Do the actors give you any input as to what they think at all?
Not so much. Thing like this, it's so kind of big, the costumes. They you do collaborate with them in the fittings, in the fact that they can wear their costumes and they're comfortable doing their, because they know what their movement is. They all have different postures in this. It's not like they come in and they're themselves. They become who they are. So you really work with them in making sure that everything moves for their acting purposes.
So obviously with a movie like this, you pull a lot from fantasy and imagination. It's not so stuck in having to stick to a historical accuracy, which must be fun. But do you tend to pull from certain eras, or do you have a favorite era that you've tended to pull from for this film?
Well, I pull a lot. This film is set sort of early 1870s. It's the beginning of the bustle period, which you see at the party. The last film was more 1860s with the hoops and that at the first party. So I took that period and interpreted that in the sort of real world of Alice. And then for the other characters, the kind of amplified characters that aren't the, like Hamish's parents, and the normal world is that world. And so the influence on Alice's military is sort of set in that. The Chinese thing is totally made up, pretty much. It's sort of loosely based on the equivalent Chinese dynasty court costumes from the period, but interpreted sort of in that way. The Red Queen and the White Queen, and especially the Red Queen, is sort of more a reflection on this sort of early illustrations of the Red Queen and the sort of reference to the cards and all that from the books, and the illustrations from the book. So my original kind of influence in those costumes was kind of the classic kind of books. And then for the people that weren't familiar with the illustrations from the books, you know, from the early Disney cartoon, like a nod a little bit to that too, for people that were comfortable in that world.
Is there one costume that you think is going to be easy to repeat, like if you're trying to do it yourself, a Halloween costume?
There's a wealth of Halloween costumes in that movie. To make yourself, I suppose the Hatter could be quite, you could probably do a spin on the Hatter pretty easily with a vintage coat and striped pants and a great hat with a scarf tied around it and do it simply that way. And you have to have a wig, of course, and the makeup is important, but that's probably maybe the most directly easy one. I see in interpretations of all, like the Red Queen interpreted in interesting ways, that works pretty well too, I think, because if you get sort of the idea of the crazy big skirt with the little waist and then do the head, you've kind of got her. Alice is probably trickier because it's closer to real but not real, so you'd have to, it is a more subtle costume, so.
How about your Halloween costume? What's your Halloween costume?
It's like my Halloween costume. I don't know if I'm going to sell it. I'm in England working, but Halloween, Tim a lot of times has a Halloween party, so we go to that. But it definitely gravitates toward horror costumes. But I don't know. I've definitely done the top hat and big skirt and sort of bodice thing. So I don't know. This year, I might go do something totally, I might go witchy this year, I don't know, more class, old school.
Is it difficult to costume for a movie that has real life characters and computer animated characters?
Not so much, because I usually see what the characters, the other people, I mean the other characters that are not real,
right,
are going to look like, and in this case, I do a book where I design all those characters' clothes, if they have clothes. So it helps visual effects to see the fabrics, the buttons, and all that, so they can scan it in and use it or not use it, but it helps give them a really good reference for the costumes. So I have some kind of input in it, even though a lot of times, you know, I've had to make costumes before for those characters. Sometimes when on the first one, they were having a really hard time with the Crispin Glover character, the Red Queen's paramour, getting the costume the way Tim wanted it. So I ended up making a costume, and they scanned it and then just stretched it out for his character, because it speeded up the process by so much. And visual effects is always grateful if you give them a reference, because they can add, like if you do a black section in the middle, they can stretch it out and do all kinds of things with it. So it, a lot of times I do that with, you know, things when they cross over.
How has technology changed the way that, you know, you do your job? You know, I feel like you have such an extensive list of all of these different movies that you've worked on. As, you know, the times have kind of changed and, you know, technology's really grown, how does it affect your work?
Well, I always look at it as my friend, because it can really give you a little something. Like if you want the cape longer, you could say, you know, I'd love this cape to be 20 feet longer, but she won't be able to walk. You know, like sometimes they can add to it in
a
way that's really cool. A lot of times the duplicating fabric still is one of the hardest things for them to do. So they love it when I give them fabric and all kinds of things ahead of time so they can start working on it. Because it's really easy for it to go flat. It's getting better over the time I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, even the time between the first Alice and this Through the Looking Glass is a 5-year span of time. And the technology was so much, like the need for visual effects for some of the things they needed from me was so much less. Like in the first one, her head shrinking, and, or, you know, Helena's, head getting huge, and the costume had to work in a way that was physically cheated. Like the neckline really was down to here on her instead of here, because the head was so big it had to fit, you know, with the costume. Where this time they were able to take it and sort of do it all in the computer, and I didn't have to technically do so many of the things, you know, that it's just moved along really quickly. And also, like when I was talking before about dark textures and stuff, the dark side of digital stuff is getting better, where they get a little bit richer texture. It's still not as, I don't think, as beautiful as film, but it's still, it's getting a lot less kind of flat.
And what's the, like, a timeline of working on a movie? Like, what's the first step? Do you, like, create sketches, or, like, how it's all the process, the whole process works?
Well, the first step's really getting the screenplay and meeting with the director. In this case, it was James Bobin, about what he, you know, how he saw the characters, like, what his input on them is. And then I take that in the screenplay, and I go do research, and I get a lot of images and material. At the same time I'm doing that, I'm gathering materials, you know, getting my team together, because our prep time is pretty fast for these movies nowadays. It's like 4 or 5 months was, I think, my prep for that movie, which is really fast for so many big costumes. And you don't think about all the background people, and everybody has to have a special look. So it's quite an intense prep. So I get the images together just of things that I like, and it comes from modern day to period to research to kind of create the world, and then I go back to the director and say, is this kind of what you're thinking? Is this the right direction? And when I know that, then I start the drawing process, which is very fast. At the same time, a lot of times with the drawing process, I've already started mocking up the shapes on dress forms, because that part of it to me is where the costume really comes to life, is when you actually start making it. It can be quite different from the initial sketch when you really start putting it on a form and making it. And then it goes into the manufacturing period. I have a workroom in-house that I work with. I have outsourced people that do stuff like children's clothes and things like that. So I give them all prototypes and stuff to copy. They take that off with material. So a lot of stuff's going on very quickly. The first day of filming, a lot of times all the costumes for the movie aren't finished. You're still manufacturing the whole time you're shooting. So it's quite, sometimes you don't even know who's in parts the first day of shooting. So you're sort of kind of always moving, you know, in 5 or 6 directions at once and keeping it going.
And how big is your team for this movie?
My manufacturing team was, I'd say, about 20 people. And then my set team, the people on set that are running the show, dressing the actors, keeping continuity, was about 5 people, depending. And then when we had the crowd days, and like when you go into the village and see all the townspeople and all that, on those days, we probably have, I have 2 or 3 people that are on crowd the whole time that we're always fitting and prepping and altering for the crowd. But on those days, the crew probably goes up to about 70 people. Because it takes, those people can't dress themselves.
Okay, before we switch